You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Carty, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. Jim, he's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand, and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the stylus knee, and we're talking moccasin joe. Where's the party gonna hang out? Out in the St. John's swamps. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Marco Bill. And Tom and the SFBI team, which were on here last week, they won't be on tonight. It's just not a good phone connection. It's too bad. They're up in, I think, somewhere in New York. And they're doing some pretty good stuff. So we'll probably come on next week and let us know what's going on. So anyway, what I'm going to do is take the show tonight. And we got some great guests. I want to thank all the listeners that have sent us some emails, signed into the guest books. There's several people out there that have purchased movies from us. Pretty good. Thank you. We appreciate that. That's what we use to do our research with, so it helps. The main, well, we've got a lot of guests tonight, quite a few. So we're going to start the show, and we're going to start out with our first guest. And our first guest, we had on before, about 2 or 3 years ago. And he has a very, very interesting story to tell us about his experience. This is going to be George from Arizona. George, how are you tonight?
Not bad, Marco Bell. How are you?
I'm doing great. Well, you know, George, some time ago, when we first got together here, you came on the show and you told us your experience back quite a few years ago now, I guess. And what I'd wanted to do is, a lot of people have never heard that, and it's a really, really interesting story. And I thought you might just kind of set the background, set up the time, and take us through your experience that you went through those years back.
Well, I think I might be able to do that, Bill. About October, November 1973, I had an opportunity to go through a division of the Utah State Hospital. And the division I went through was located, may or may not still be there, I don't know. But at that time, it was located in American Fork, Utah, which is located just north of Provo. And this particular division of the state hospital is where they keep human freaks of nature. There was 10 of us in the group that had the opportunity to go through this building and see some of these people. And there was definitely, I mean, it was visible that they were definitely freaks of nature. You know, multiple arms, two heads, things like that. But there was one thing that really caught my eye. In this barred cage was a woman sitting on a stool. And inside this cage there was also another woman in there, she was normal, but she was one of the nurses. She was in there brushing this woman's hair. And this woman, I mean, you could tell she was very well manicured. They kept her bathed. There was no odor with her. But, I mean, she was literally covered with hair, with the exception of her forehead and her cheekbones. Her nose didn't have any hair. Her nose was much like that of a human. Her mouth was wide, but like that of a human. You could look through you could see through the hair, and you could tell that she was more human than anything else. Are you still there, Bill?
Yeah, I'm here. I think, hey, Matt?
Yeah, we're getting a bunch of background music there. I don't know where that's coming from.
Yeah, it's coming from a dial-in from somebody here.
Okay. Anyway, this, there it goes. Anyway, this woman, she looked very much human. You could tell she was very much human. But, I mean, you had to look through the hair. They had her wearing a dress. The tops of her feet were hairy. Her hair was thick. And this woman in the cage with her was brushing her hair. And I think that was mostly just to keep her calm. But it was a very interesting experience. I almost wanted to reach out and touch her, except they had a rope around the cage. And the rope was about 3 or 4 feet around the cage. And we were told not to touch her. She didn't like being touched. But she looked at me, and I saw her eyes were black. And she looked at me, and I kind of felt like her eyes were softening a little bit just to look at me. And I did. I made the mistake of almost reaching out to touch her. And the nurse saw me do it, and she literally threw me out of the, they just ran us all right out of the room immediately. Hang
wow.
on a minute, Bill.
Sure.
Okay, we're going to let that ring. That's my girlfriend calling from somewhere. It goes to show you who's the most important, huh?
Well, you know, when you saw this, this lady, I mean, you said it had like hair all over it.
Yeah, you could see her. I mean, she was wearing a dress. She had, you could actually see she had cleavage.
Uh-huh.
They said that she had been captured up in Oregon as a child by loggers.
Wow.
And she was up there in the forest running loose, and she had been captured by loggers. She had been watching the loggers, and the loggers had managed to sneak up on her and capture her.
Wow.
And that's how she ended up down into Utah State Hospital.
And she had a human-looking face, huh?
Yeah, she had a human-looking face. It wasn't a dog face. It wasn't, it wasn't really anything out of the ordinary. You could see through the hair. She actually looked rather pretty.
Uh-huh.
She actually looked rather attractive. They said that they took her out into the yard. They had a yard in the back of the building where they took their patients, take them out there to get sunlight or whatever, you know. And they would take her out there, and she would enjoy herself. She would lay down on the lawn or whatever, you know. But, other than that, they didn't say a whole lot about her. But I'll tell you, Bill, I'm 67 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard stories of Bigfoot since I was a kid. Of course, back then it was referred to as Sasquatch.
Right.
And, it's always piqued my interest. You know, Sasquatch or Bigfoot has always piqued my interest. And when I saw her, there was no doubt in my mind what I was looking at.
Well,
she couldn't have been anything but the offspring of Bigfoot.
Wow. That's amazing.
But her feet, they said that she would not wear shoes. She did not wear shoes, wasn't wearing shoes at the time. Her feet were kind of, she was kind of flat-footed. The arches were kind of fallen. They were wide. They were long. But to look at her was, that was the height of the trip right there, just to see her.
Goodness gracious.
It was something that, I never talked to anybody about. Matter of fact, 3 years ago when I told you about her, you were the first one I'd ever talked to her about.
Amazing.
Since then I've talked to a couple of other people. But you were the first person I ever talked to them about. They said that the people at the hospital told us simply that whatever you see here, you keep it to yourself.
Wow.
And that's what amazing. I did for many, many years.
That's amazing. That's something else. There's one other instance where we had someone that had had a similar experience to you, but it wasn't a hospital. It was a some sort of a containment place, not a zoo, but a containment place where they had different creatures and stuff.
And yeah, I think you mentioned that to me quite a while back.
Yeah, and it was very similar to that, and but it was a government, a government facility, government-operated facility, and
I think
and the people,
I'll tell you what, Bill. I think the feds know about Bigfoot. I think the feds have studied Bigfoot and are still studying Bigfoot.
Well, it could. That very well could be. It's hard to tell, but you know, with so many people, you know, like for instance, a hospital like that is a place where you hide those kinds of things, not purposely, but indiscriminately. They're hidden from public view.
Yeah.
And people, it's not, in other words, it may not be an intentional thing. It's just something where, you know, somebody had to take care of that person, and that was the only place, you know, the state hospital was the only place that would administer to it, and it couldn't take care of itself, and they had probably no idea where really, what its real, you know, beginnings were, or where it really came from.
Yeah.
Other than it was a child found in the wild or something.
They told us about the other people that were there, that some of them had actually been in carnivals.
Uh-huh.
And when the carnivals folded up, they didn't have a place to go. And they ended up putting them there.
Wow.
But for her, she had come out of the forests of Oregon.
Oh, my gosh.
You know.
God, George, I want to thank you again for coming on and sharing your experience with us. It's a unique one, I'm going to tell you right now. I mean, to me, this is so unique. And it's just one in a million kind of an experience, you know.
Well, and it was one of a kind of experience for me. And like I said, the second I laid eyes on her, I just knew. There was no doubt in my mind what I was looking at.
Oh, I know. Oh, gosh.
There was no doubt.
Are you going to stick around with us until the end of the show if we have a discussion?
Hey,
somebody has some questions.
Well, I would stick around just for spite.
Super. Super. What I'm going to do, I'm going to go off to a commercial, and when we come back, and I'm going to mute you out, and when we come back, you can listen to the rest of the show, right, like you are right now, and what I'll do is at the end of the show, I'll unmute everybody, and we'll have a question and answer period.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much, George, for coming on tonight.
Bill, you take care, and I'll be right here when we get ready to talk, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was George, and he's revisited his experience of 1973, and a really amazing story. What I'd like to do, I'd like to find out, Mac, are you on the line there? Mac? Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go commercial, and I'm going to try to get our friend Mac back on. Here we go. Well, I think here we go. Here we go.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searching for Bigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Mac, can you... Mac, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Well, you're fine. So we're there. It's not... I'm going to bring the next guest on. And hold on here. I got
okay.
There we go.
am I pretty clear?
You're very clear. I'm going to mute you out.
Okay, good.
And
okay,
then we're going to go to our next guest. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to Anthony in Virginia tonight. Anthony, how are you?
Doing good, Michael Bill. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great.
Good.
Well, let's go a little background. In the last couple of weeks here, you had a friend or an acquaintance that you met. And some time ago when he moved into his place, it was kind of a chance meeting that you had with him, right? And you didn't come out and just say, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you take us through what happened and how things happened, and then tell us where we're at right now today.
All right. Well, this is a new friend that I met in the neighborhood. And we happened to meet because, you know, his kid and my kid were on the same team. And after a while, you know, he invited us over, you know, because, you know, he has, he's a great dad and you know, wanting his children to succeed, you know, in the sports that they're playing. You know, so he had a lot of extra stuff, and he invited us over, you know. And so one of the times, yeah, one of the times we went over to his place, you know, after the kids were done practicing, you know, they were playing in this pool, they went in this pool and stuff, and he was describing to me some of the things that were going on in his area, and it was just out of his own mouth that he just happened to say he kind of nonchalantly you know, with some of the weird things that are going on here, he says, you know, he thinks, you know, that it was Bigfoot. And I didn't, you know, come right out and say I was a believer or anything like that, but, you know, I was kind of like, you know, well, what made you think of that? You know, and he just started explaining to me some of the things that were going on. And like I mentioned in the past shows, he talked about the big footprints. He took a piece of his property and made a little, you know, ball field out of it. So there's no grass growing. You know, there's a big section of it that there's no grass growing, and he had set up like a baseball diamond on his field. And he's telling me that one day when it was raining and the field is muddy, he said he had seen the footprints there. He said, you know, between the one print and the next, the stride was so long that he literally had to jump from one to the other, you know. And he didn't know what that was, but you know, again, he didn't take it seriously. But over the years, he kept saying, and by the way, this is as we speak. You know, I mean, it's happening to this day. They're still there. They are still communicating. You know, with the wood knocks and whistles. Okay. They still kind of go let him know that he's there, and it was because of him saying, talking about the knocking and stuff like that, and you know, then I started opening up. You know, when he started telling me all of this, I started opening up, and I said, well, you know, I just so happened to have that particular interest, and then I started explaining to him what got me interested, and I asked him about going on to the wooded area, you know, to show him, you know, what to look for. And and when we went into the woods, you know, right before we went in there, I was describing to him, you know, some of the tree formations and some of the ones I had taken pictures of, some which you have on your mm-hmm. website already.
Right.
But I was telling him what to look for. And even before we went in the woods, he says, oh, there's a bunch of those back there, you know, like the Arch Tree Formation, sometimes the Teepee Formation. And when we went back, I mean, literally, as soon as you walk in there, now, there wasn't a whole bunch, like, in the area where I took Tom, but there's a lot, you know. I mean, where I took Tom, I mean, literally, everywhere you turn, there's a whole bunch of them, you know.
Right.
But in his place, you know, there was a bunch there. And then he started noticing, like, you know, some of these trees that are leaning or bent over, he just happened to notice, you know, he just, like, picked one of them up. He's like, oh, this doesn't have a root system. That means this was put here, you know. And so he started, you know, picking up on that. But, and if you recall from a few weeks ago, when we saw some impressions in the ground, you know, what looked like might have been a footprint, but we found a clear footprint right behind a tree, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, so that was, like, you know, more exciting for him. And then since then he's been, you know, knocking back. You know, he's been taking a branch, and he's not knocking on the trees. He's knocking on a PVC pipe, and he says that they've been responding to that.
Well, could be. I mean, you know, I mean, they can. I'm not sure it takes a tree to knock on. It just happens to be the thing that's available to the creatures.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I mean, and even when he first started telling me that, you know, that they were letting, kind of like, he felt like they were letting him know that they were there by knocking, and without me, and backing up a little, just prior to me telling him that I had an interest in it, it was out of his own mouth. He said, it's always one, two, or three knocks, you know?
Wow.
Like, he said, they let me know they're there, you know? And then after a couple of weeks of this, you know, just trying to, you know, seeing him at the ball field and just curious about anything new, you know, plus, you know, the rains come through. I just happened to ask him, hey, have you noticed any muddy prints or anything like that? None of that. But then he, you know, talked about, you know, when he first moved into the area. You know, he didn't tell me this at first, but he talked about when he first moved into the area. He said that he just sharing with me that he has to change his opinion on what he saw, because he said when he first moved to the area, he said every day for about over a month that he would see monkeys swinging in the trees, you know, they were fast, you know, and they would be on the tops of the trees, and they'd be like jumping from one tree into the other. He said they were real fast, and they would jump. He pointed to the tree line, you know, and he said it was always from this direction to that direction in the morning. He said it was always from this direction to that direction, and he was seeing every day. And I said, well, you know, I just happened to ask him. I'm like, you know, going that way, you know, there's a road going that way. I'm just wondering why they would have to be going that way. And he said, well, on the other side of that road, there's the forest, and, you know, so that kind of made sense why they were going in that direction. But he said he saw it, and he said he didn't think nothing of it. You know, he just said, okay, there's a monkey around here, you know. But he saw it every day for was what, like over a month? And then he said that's when, you know, he stopped seeing them, but he knew they were there because of the noises they were making. So,
wow.
And he just kind of thought it was the monkey sound. Very rarely that he would hear some monkey chatter, you know, sound like conversations going on.
Well, it may not be necessarily rare. Monkey, but it's a guttural kind of chatter.
Yeah.
We call it monkey chatter, but the sounds that I've heard are not monkey, but they're kind of similar. It's their own thing. I mean, it's kind of a guttural, I don't know what you call
right.
it. Something is pretty neat, though, when you hear it. I mean, it's just, we've got a couple of videos that have that in it, and it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Well,
definitely.
Gosh, I can't, man, this is amazing. I know you've been back and forth here to see him more recently. Anything going on in your area right now?
Well, I mean, we're trying to set things up in the next couple of weeks. There's nothing besides what, you know, what he's been telling me.
Yeah.
when we went back into his area, to the woods again, and, you know, just we did see that there were some things that were different. However, while we were there, as we were leaving, you know, we heard some knocks, you know. So, but, you know, again, just hearing something, you know, there's no physical evidence to produce.
No, I understand. But it just, it gives you, it tunes you in that there's something there. And it keeps you, you know, it keeps you alert for that area that it's still active. And, you know, that one footprint that you did find, was it, you know, what did you get an approximate size of what it was and all that?
Oh, yeah, because I just happened to be wearing my boots, and I know it was, I'm a size 10, you know, and I have my work boot on, you know, so I know it's about 12 and a half inches, but, you know, the boot tip to tip, you know, but this was a few inches longer than that, and I'd say it was close to about 18 inches, you know.
Wow.
So,
wow, that's pretty good.
Yep.
It was amazing,
right? It was right behind a tree. It was part of a tree. I just happened to tell him. I said, you know, this, you know, what I call the peekaboo tree. You know, they kind of like, you know, I said the part of the tree that's not facing your home, and this far away from your home. I said this is probably one of them trees that they stop at and look back and forth because there's, you know, the debris on this side of the tree is cleared. You know, you could just see the dirt, and then that's what made me look down and find the footprint. You know.
Wow.
So,
that is amazing.
But, And when we left the wooded area, the last time we heard the knocks, it was, I didn't say anything. To me, it sounded like a knock, but I didn't say anything. But he was the one that said, hey, did you hear that? He said, that was a knock. I said, yeah, I did hear that, you know, because I didn't want him to, you know, to think every little thing is a knock. But I said, but to me, that was pretty, you know, it was definitely
sure.
a knock.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to keep, I know you're going to keep, track of all that stuff going on, and you know, give me a call every once in a while, and we'll have you back on again too to bring us up to date. That's pretty interesting,
yeah.
though. That see, what's very interesting to me about this whole issue is that he saw the creatures in the trees. We've got videos of them in the trees and things, but there's very few people that have ever made sightings in trees, and which is a pretty neat thing. I mean, I've got the video that's on the website right now where you see a creature crawling up the tree and then the tree shake. And what you don't see and don't know, there's another creature already up there. When we did a stabilization on the video, there's another creature already up there, and they're both shaking the tree. And whether they're communicating with each other, whatever they're doing, the tree is really going back and forth. And you hear those guttural noises that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll see the creature crawling back down from the tree and then, you know, going off. And it's unfortunate that the video camera was mounted. It's one of those trail cams, right?
Okay.
And it was towards the evening. But we had it so that we could lighten it up enough to where you could see everything happening. It's really neat. It's pretty good. It's in Bigfoot Lives 2, I believe.
Okay.
It's a movie that's in there. But I've got it on the website. If you haven't looked at it, it says watch this when you go up to the www.bigfootlive.com homepage. And it'll say watch this.
Bigfoot Lives 2, so now I know when you mention it, so I know what you're talking about right now towards the beginning of the video there.
Yeah. Well, Anthony, thanks. You're going to stick around for the end, right?
Yes, sir. As long as my battery holds out, sure will.
Okay, buddy. Thank you for coming on tonight and bringing us up to date with what's going on. And we'll be right back with you towards the end of the show here.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's Anthony from Virginia. Now we're going to go out hold on, I got to find, my gosh, oh, gotcha, Mac. Mac, how are you, my friend?
Good. Well, young fella.
Well, Theron has not made it. Theron didn't make it tonight. I don't know what happened.
I can always make up for Theron. I turned 64 last month.
Holy smokes.
So, young fella, I'm doing good.
Well, Theron told me the other day that you and him were going out to investigate some stuff. I guess you're going to go out tomorrow.
We had planned to go today, and just things kind of happen. You know how the chores pile up on you? And,
oh, yeah.
And, I had to move some horses across my farm, and I hadn't had time to do what I wanted to do. But I did go looking right after I talked to you. I traveled down the Pearl River. There's a little dirt road goes down the Pearl River. It's about 5 miles across country. And it's some pretty spooky-looking places and some good-looking places. But I thought I'd seen like a trackway a while back, but there's so much undergrowth right now on the road, and I was looking for tracks. And the reason I went down there, because it's just perfect timing for the weather to see tracks or see anything. And you got the river on one side, a lot of trees, and you got some beautiful virgin timber on the other side, but there's just so much undergrowth and dust. And like I say, it's rained a lot here, but it's raining in spots. And this road was just dusty as it could be. And I can see better tracking in the wintertime. You know, it's easier for me to track in the wintertime. But I do think I have a trackway close by, like 3/4 mile from me. That's not that far. And Marco, let me say a little quick story. Everybody, you know, that's heard me thinks, look, I was a singer entertainer for 20 years, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and sometimes Thursday, I was in woods, I was hunting. But there was an old man by the name of John Henry Ford. And I named my truck John Henry Ford, old four-wheel drive. And Mr. John Henry shot a big 8-point buck one evening, and it was getting dark. And he asked me, would I try to track that deer, because it'd probably be the last deer he ever killed. And I said, I'd be glad to. And he just too old, about 300 pounds, and so I found the blood, and I went to tracking. And to make this short, I tracked that deer 4.5 miles with a flashlight, and I almost gave up because the blood started getting out. And then I found, excuse the language, but I found guts, intestines, on a wire fence right before it crossed a little dirt road. And I found the deer about 60 yards from there, and 4.5 miles in the swamp, hills and hollows. I'm not saying that to be bragging, but I was only 12 years old when I did that.
Oh,
and since then, I've been hooked on it, and that fellow was one happy fellow. It was one of the biggest joys in my life to get back to the camp without getting hurt, but I didn't realize creatures at that time. And since then, I used to look straight ahead for deer. Now I look up and down and all around everywhere I walk slower, because in the back of my mind, it sticks to me. I'm looking for more than just a deer. And I don't get hurt like I used to. It's just I might get one year now. I don't hunt like I used to. But the tracking part, I just enjoy it. I'm not the greatest tracker in the world, but I just crave it. You know, I enjoy the anticipation of what you might find, you know. But a lot of people think, oh, he said he's seen a Bigfoot. But look, I used to travel home at night after entertaining. I enjoyed it because I was looking for deer. But it finally, one day when I was going to a place to entertain and play, that's when I saw these two creatures come out in the road. And from then on, I backed it out for a while, yet I kept listening to stories. But I didn't let it affect my hunting. But and that was 33 years ago. But two or three years ago, when I saw that little juvenile come across the highway in front of me, that I said, that's enough. I've had enough. I'm going to show him. I'm going to find out where he is. And I believe when Tom and Jim Dawson and Bill Coffey were baiting that tree at the reservation that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, while they were baiting, I did about three snapshots, maybe four still shots. And I got a picture, and to the left is like a little family. And then there was what I call him Junior, one I've been looking for. I'm pretty sure at the same size, looks so much like him. But I had to zero all that in, and that was when they were baiting the tree. And Jim Dawson put gobs of peanut butter on that tree. And he made it two eyes, a nose, a mouth. It was like a Bigfoot with the peanut butter.
Uh-huh.
And I took a picture of them doing that, and I zeroed that in later, just recently. And even my son said, "Dad, that's the real deal. That's right straight ahead is a big one, about 75 yards, watching all the time with his two arms up in the air like he was so upset, you know." And I said, "I tell y'all, I had a picture, and left with like a little family, you know, left up in some trees. And it looked like the young one I called Junior, you know." So I'm not saying that's for sure, but it looks so much like it. And
Well, I understand.
I wished that Jim and Bill Coffey and all of them had sent these pictures before we had the talk a couple of weeks ago. It was pretty amazing that they'd make the tree there and the creature's looking at them at the same time, you know. I didn't want to come on like some of these guys. I've had plenty of time in the woods because it was a scapegoat for me to get away from crowds of people. And
sure.
Music was, I enjoyed music. But it was, sometimes I'd go to deer camp and stay at deer camp by myself, like, two miles from the main log road, you know, where our camp is. And I'd spend the night, and people say, "What, man, why are you still?" I said, "Look, I'm so proud to get away from all these crowds of people, and sometimes it kind of gets nerves." But it was just a getaway, but you learn from watching. And when I drive at night, I'm looking for eyes. I'm looking for, you know, like most hunters. I think most hunters have learned to train their eyes to look for deer. And but most people today, when they're driving, they're just looking at the bumper of the next car, keeping it hard. They don't know if the sun is shining. They're not happy at all because they got other things on their mind. But good hunters, they watch for animals cross the road, you know, watch stuff like that. And that's why they don't run into them.
Wow. Pretty neat.
I didn't mean to take up so much time talking about that.
No. That's okay. You did fine. Thanks for being on and telling us, you know, going through this with us. You're going to stay on until the end of the show, right?
Sure.
Okay.
We're gonna go
do a commercial. Thanks for coming on tonight, Mac. I appreciate it a whole bunch.
Sure. Thank you.
And we're gonna go to commercial, come back, and we're gonna talk with Rocky and Swede, and then we'll go Rocky and Swede are here. They're gonna be here tonight, and then we're gonna go into our discussion period.
If I hadn't met those two 15 years ago, I would be in another world. I'd be locked up. They my kind of people.
I know. They're good people. Thank you, Mac, for coming. I want to mute you out, and then you just hang in there, and we'll be back.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mac, and we're going to go to a commercial here real quick-like and come back, and we're going to talk with Rocky and Swede. Here we go.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception
that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back. And ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, I've heard a few of the, there's a few shows and things that have been on the air here in the last month or so. And this Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax is our videograph of the whole thing as it happened, the telephone conversations, everything. And and all these people that are out there spewing all these this garbage, I'm not going to mention any names because I don't have to, but or people that think they're a part of it or know everything about it, I'm going to guarantee you they don't. I was there during most of it, and quite a few of the people that I guess maybe people want to get notoriety or they want to put other people down. I'm not sure what the purpose of slandering other people is, other than trying to ruin their reputation or and other things like that, or make themselves look better, I guess. I don't know. But we don't pay attention to those, and we just ignore it. But if you really want to know what happened and you really want to, you know, get the whole true story, it was on a couple of television shows here a couple of years ago. They ran a story on it, and it's Anatomy of the Bigfoot Hoax. And if you haven't seen it before, well, go get it. You can get it on in our store, shoppingforbigfoot.com, or you can get it on many other places. It's available almost everywhere. It's on cable TV. It's on pay-per-view. I mean, it's all kinds of different avenues where the thing's at. But, Doug, you know, if you haven't seen it, go do that, and you'll see that what really happened. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go out here to Arkansas to our good buddy Rocky and Swede. Let me unmute them. Rocky and Swede, how are you guys?
I'm doing real good. I think the Swede might have a sore jaw, but...
Oh, gosh.
Well, I'm doing good. Gained 5 pounds this week.
I started a new career, Marco. I'm a dentist now.
Oh, my God. Oh, geez.
Yeah. I had to, the Swede had kind of a rough bout with a bag of trail mix, and it seems as though there's a walnut hole in there. And, of course, he's been griping about that tooth for the last 3 months, and anyhow, I told him to go to the dentist, and he said he didn't see one. Well, we were way out in the woods. And anyhow, I said, well, I guess I'll have to pull it out. And he said, do it.
Oh, God.
And so it took about half an hour to get it out. And I had my knee in his chest and my elbow in his eye, but it finally came out. He spit out some blood and then wanted to go eat some watermelon.
Yeah, we snuck down to the Blue Hole and had one, didn't we, Rocky?
Yeah, we did.
It's the place we stash our food when we're down there. We got a nice Blue Hole down in the spring down there, and we wrap it all stuff up in a gunny sack and submerge it in that spring where nothing can get it. Watermelon was mighty good after that tooth. It was just a few minutes of agony for her to get rid of it, but it was worth it. We didn't have to come back to town and leave our expedition, so it worked out all right.
Well, I want everybody to know that if they have any bad appendix or anything, I'm ready to try that too.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
Well,
I'll tell you what.
Three years ago or so, whenever it was, when Rocky took the little tumble and dislocated his shoulder, You know, I tried out my physician skills there to put the shoulder back in, but it didn't work out so good. So I think he found a little pleasure in that tooth pulling, I think.
Wow. Well, tell us what's going on. What you guys been out there taking a look around? Tell us what's going on.
Ron.
Well.
Hi, it's Ron. We'll be with you after we get done with Rocky here, and we'll bring you back on. That's no problem. So tell us what's going on.
I'm excited, Marco. It's coming. I'm gonna let Rocky run with it a little bit. He's got some stuff to tell you about. I'm thinking maybe.
Well. It's one of those things. I'm going to hold back a little bit.
Sure.
I'll go so far as to say that there was a double sighting.
Wow.
Last Tuesday, in the middle of the day, about 2:45, and unfortunately, the Swede wasn't out there. But it was me and another guy, and, I've been out there. I went out there last night until it got too dark to see. And, anyhow, I'm really not going to go into it until I get a chance to talk to Tom about it.
Sure, don't worry about it. It's okay. Yeah,
but it was really exciting. I have a friend. He had a stroke here a while back, and he doesn't get around very well, and he doesn't have a car or anything. So I just went over. I thought I'd get him out of the house. So I took him to the woods with me, and when I say the woods, I mean I was deep in, and he was the one that spotted it, and I wouldn't have spotted it at all if it hadn't been for him. But he pointed it out, and I think the Swede is he keeps documents and stuff. I think he's kind of got a theory on what's going on out there.
Sure.
Yeah, Marco, I don't know. I mean, this is not anything any more than just keeping notes over the last bunch of years. But, you know, every time that, you know, we just had that big supermoon that just showed up, you know, I mean, where the moon was here, I don't know what it was the first of the week sometime.
Yeah.
Every time that me and Rocky have been out and about and we've seen signs and this, that, and the other, when it's a full moon... On the full moon, when the moon is, we never see anything at nighttime or any kind of anything going on during the full moon. A few days after it starts to wane off a little bit, within about a couple of days to about a week, we absolutely have a daytime sighting of some sort or something that's happened during the day. And I've
gone
down from time after time after time, and I was looking through my notes, and there was probably 11 or 12 events that happened afternoon, like between the noon hour and the 3 o'clock p.m., and always 2 or 3 days after the full moon. And it's just, I don't know that if it's just coincidental or not, but I thought I'd bring it.
No, I mean, that's an interesting point.
Had that experience.
Well, yeah, that's a really interesting point, Sweet. I'm telling you.
Creatures like the full moon. I don't think they like to stir around in the dark during the full moon. I don't think they like it.
It was probably too visual.
I think they just don't like it. I think they prefer the total darkness it's kind of like being pent up, you know, that full moon's there and it's there for, you know, such a long time. And then when it finally starts waning off, then they start going for it. In the daytime, it's amazing. I'm not sure what's going on, but we've seen tracks that weren't there. You know, we've doubled back on stuff and seen tracks that were made after we had went through and had been during the daytime. You know, you just don't. It's just some kind of correlation with that moon, and I didn't know if anybody else had ever noticed anything like that, or if they picked up on it, or not. Well, so I thought it would.
You know, Sweden, there's little things like that that you're going through. I mean, it's like, you know, we'd always had this hunch that Bigfoot was a single kind of a thing, right? It's only one size, one, you know, one package, right?
Right.
Until we started getting reports about all these other things, and in the very beginning, we thought it was all, you know, ballyhoo, nothing. You know what I'm talking about? We thought, a dog-snouted Bigfoot, sure. But then, you know, you got to open your mind, and you, every single time we've been proven wrong that we've done it. And then we all of a sudden had all these encounters of this creature that from all different points of different states, and it was the same description. So, you know, I think you've got something, too. I mean, that's how we find things out. I mean, there's just too much we don't know about these creatures. And, of course, you and Rocky spend a lot of time, more time than the average person that does investigations in the wild there. And so you're very acclimated to the terrain and to the other animals and even to these creatures. And I think that's a significant part of being able to determine different habits and other things that take place.
I think it's really good. We've been going to this same general area for years. There's 290,000 acres out there of nothing but wild. And years ago, me and him just hit on this little old place, and we've been there for going there for years now.
Yeah.
And that was where I got my damn cuties stolen. You know, like I say, I still haven't got over that thing taking my fruit. He could have had the nectarines, he could have had the tangerines, but he took.
He had to take your fruit. Take your cuties.
It'd be okay. But the way that I took that guy in Tuesday, it was a lot further mileage-wise to go the way I went. But when it, you know, as the crow flies, we probably weren't... How far is it from the lake to the campsite, Robert? 2 miles?
2 miles on the walk, yeah. Yeah,
so,
it's probably 2 miles away to crow flies from it.
Right. It's just, I mean, it's all, everything's been happening in the same area, which is kind of going against, you know, what we were thinking to start with, because we've been staking another area out for, 3 years now.
Sure.
And it seems to me like it's been hanging around pretty close to our campsite, I guess, waiting for another sack of cuties to show up. But
it probably is.
Marco, you know,
well, I want to thank
about a month ago, I've been telling you I was getting fired up that it was coming up on July, because that's when everything starts happening and into August and when we go. And once again, it's doing it again, and I just was going to point out, like Rock and I had determined the pawpaws are already bloomed and started to make little fruit, so it's going to be a great year this year, and I'm hoping it's going to be something that, you know, we can share with everybody out there and have some great evidence, and we'll see what happens here in the near future. So I think I'm pretty excited about it. Anyway,
yeah, I think it's pretty good
about it.
Well, gosh, I want to thank both of you for coming on tonight. You're going to stay here for a little bit. We're going to go to Theron and then bring him on for about 5 minutes and see what's going on in his area, and then we're going to go into discussion, and we'll bring everybody on. You may have some questions.
If there's
people may have some questions for you.
If there's,
is that all right?
Any teeth pulled or an appendix removed, be sure to get hold of me.
I'll make sure we advertise that, Rocky.
We can go to so far as the appendix just yet there, my friend. Not mine, anyway.
Oh, you little face.
No.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, Marco,
I want to mute you out just temporarily here, and we'll come back on here in a few minutes.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rocky and Sweet from Arkansas. We're going to go next here. Teron, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good, Marco. I was going to call in earlier. I just couldn't locate my cell phone. I just was over at the next door neighbor's earlier.
Yeah.
And I left it on the table out there, and I was sure I brought it in the house, you know, and finally he come over and said, hey, you forgot your phone. So he brought it over to me about 10 or 15 minutes ago.
Well, there's nothing you can do. Don't worry about it. What's going on? We had Mac on.
Well, things have been kind of quiet here lately, but I got a fella said that a couple of months ago there was a sighting at someone's house near my house. Anyway,
uh-huh.
a fella was talking to me maybe a couple of days ago that in that same general area, he was walking through the woods and something kept on walking beside him through the to the thicker part of the woods, and he couldn't really see what it was, but he could kind of make out the form of it, and when
uh-huh.
he would stop, it would stop. So it was in that same general area, and he said he got the creeps, and he hauled off, you know, fast as he could, but he told me that it didn't seem like it was any kind of animal that he knew of, but he really couldn't see what it was, but it was stalking him, you know, in
yeah.
the same general area where the last sighting was. So I didn't get to ask him when this was, but we've had sightings and encounters here for the past several years now.
Sure.
And you know, it wasn't until my mother and my sister and my nieces and I kept on having the sightings around my mother's house. It wasn't until then that I decided to call Searching for Bigfoot Incorporated with Thomas.
I remember that.
So,
yeah, I remember that clearly.
Yeah. Well, there's not. We have. On the Choctaw Indian Reservation, it's not just one massive reservation land. It's a more checkerboarded, you know. We have 100,000 acres of reservation land here, you know, and it's not all one mass. It's here, there, you know. And
right, yeah, they got it's allocated to different areas.
Yes, and anyway, just about every community, we call them communities, has had sightings of some sort, you know, and we've had the last year a fella that recently passed away. I went to go see him, and he said there was a white one, had to be about 10 feet tall, because he took a fishing pole and measured it up by his house, and
yep.
He stuck that fishing pole by the wall, and he said, this is how tall he was. And it looked like about 10 feet to me, you know.
Wow.
Anyway, he said it was all white, and then he was, he walked behind his house, and there he was, standing by the edge of the woods just behind his yard. And he told me that they stood there and just literally looked at each other, you know, in the eye.
Yeah,
and he said he didn't feel any fear, because the creature didn't show any menacing features on its face. He looked like he was all gentle and
mm-hmm.
friendly looking. And finally, the creature turned around and walked into the woods, you know. And we've had many sightings where there's black ones and there's reddish brown ones and there's blonde ones, and there's brown ones, and there's white ones. So we got I've been keeping up with these sightings and encounters all these years ever since I saw that Patterson,
right,
Gimlin
Yeah, the Patterson film.
Video. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what I saw in 1972, but after that, I saw the Patterson film, and I was thinking, that's what I saw, you know.
Yep.
And
why don't we bring all the other people on here? We had some really interesting things tonight, and we'll all discuss. Yeah. I want to bring on, Rocky, Swede, got Anthony, and George, and Mac. Everybody's on the discussion period. Let's have, does anybody have any questions for George about his experience?
Did y'all just hear me shoot twice? I was shooting at home, Dylan. Okay. I got a question for Tweed and Rocky. And since this is a big week about the moon, and it's closer to the Earth, it has been a long time, and I've run across this in the past, on a full moon night, I just don't see very many deer as I do when it's maybe a quarter moon, something like that. Do you guys have this? Do y'all do the same thing? I mean, like on a full moon night, do you see very few deer compared to what you do during the
Mac, you know what I see whenever it's full moon on deer? If I'm walking around in the dark, the deer are laying down. They're bedded down on the full moon during the night.
Yeah. You don't see them crossing or getting up, moving around like, do you?
They're laying down just like they do during the daytime. They won't stir.
Yeah.
I walk right up on them, I mean, to the point of, like, you know, 35, 40 feet from them, they'll jump up in front of you and, you know, like a covey of quail and give you a fast heart there for a second. But they were definitely laying down in the moonlight. They don't like it, I don't think.
Right. Just like it's a sun.
Yeah.
I've had the same kind of thing. One day I jumped about six or seven deer on my horse in broad daylight in some sage. And but at night, I don't see them on a full moon night like I do. Like 3 or 4 days later, I see it there. But
no.
I wonder, the moon has anything to do with, you know, with Bigfoot, all kind of animals.
I think they don't like the daylight. I don't think they like the full moon.
We went out Friday night, and we were out there Saturday night and most of the day Sunday. We saw two hogs Saturday.
During the daytime.
Right. We saw three deer, but there was absolutely nothing stirring during the night. Not a hoot owl, not a dang
thing. I've noticed that too many times, you know, back in what I call my back outlaw days. Now, I'm not that way anymore, but look, I've seen these deer at night so many times, and I just never just see them too much at on a full moon night. But about 3 or 4 days later, you start seeing deer and even other animals. So I just wondered what y'all thought about that.
Well, Mac, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm glad somebody else has seen it. I thought maybe I just might have been just kind of, you know, I just noticed it over the years, and I've got it written down, you know, on stuff, not necessarily just on the deer, but it just seems to me like every time we've went out, we've seen you know, events and signs and tracks and stuff. It's always been a few days after the full moon, and usually during the daytime, not during the night. So it's just
one night I stayed on my deer stand at my farm. I stayed out there at 10 o'clock at night. I just wanted to see, and I knew it was a good place for them to feed. Everybody thought I'd got lost, but I wanted to see if they would finally come in. But I never did see anything come in. A couple times I did that.
Yeah, they won't. I've just, like I said, we've been walking around out there, looking around out through the woods at, you know, 10, 11 o'clock after sunset. You can see pretty good in the woods, you know, on a full moon and be walking down through there without a light. I don't ever use a light very much unless I'm on a bluff or something. I don't want to fall off, but I walk right up on them deer before, and they'd be laying down. And you don't ever see a deer laying down in the dark, but on the full moon night, that's just something I've kind of caught on to, and it was just something I wanted to share with everybody to see if anyone had noticed it.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that too.
Well, you know, talking about the full moon here in Mississippi, at one of the communities called Wokchito, a couple of friends of mine who are both deceased now, it was cold, nippy night, and they were riding down the highway and decided they wanted to major calls, so they went into a freshly made dirt road made by loggers. They went in that trail, and they came out in a clearing space where all the loggers had cut all the trees, and they got out of the car and was relieving themselves, and it was full moon, and all of a sudden they heard breathing, heavy breathing sounds. And they looked over where the heavy breathing sound was coming from, and they could literally see the mist coming from the creature's mouth. You know, when it's cold, he said that he was just standing there, didn't even move, just stand there, and they could hear him breathing, and they could see his breath because it was a cold, nippy night. But it was they could see it because it was a full moon. You know, that's what they were telling me. And I don't know if they actually hate full moon, but that's one of the stories that I picked up here, keeping records of encounters and sightings here on the Choctaw Reservation.
Well, when we were out in the woods over the weekend, the moon was so bright. And, you know, most times when we're out there, we've almost always had to run a bear out of camp, or we'd have to run hogs out of camp, except the little squealer I shot. She stayed. We walked around Friday night and Saturday night because, I mean, it was just terribly bright. And we saw nothing. It was spooky. It was so quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah. I've had that feeling, too. It'd be so spooky, it'd be so quiet. And the moon just kind of is such an atmosphere for a spooky situation, you know. And but I just never see very much activity on a full moon.
Well, the moon that we had over this weekend, of course, they said it was, you know, thousands of miles closer to the Earth than normal. Well, it was like it was, you know, about to hit us in the head. It was.
Yeah, it was super cool.
There was nothing to be seen. There was nothing to be heard. Crickets.
There wasn't any armadillos running. You notice, Rocky? I mean, there wasn't nothing.
Nothing. No crickets. No.
It was almost like daylight. You know, just nothing was stirring. Not the nocturnal stuff was not moving during that moon. But right afterwards, after that full moon, you know, everything got going, and you see some stuff in the daytime. It's weird. It's like they're making up for lost time.
Yeah.
Between about noon and 3 o'clock was when we saw. Everything that we saw between noon and 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does anybody have a question or any questions for Anthony and or George? Anthony, I thought it was kind of significant.
I have a question for George.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
When he was at the that hospital there, and he was able to get a visual of this thing, you know, behind the bars. I mean, If you were not stopped by that nurse, do you think that that creature would have, you know, just kind of reached out and shook your hand or something? I mean,
no, I don't think she was going to reach out and shake my hand.
I mean, yeah, I didn't know if the creature was being friendly or being defensive.
I had a feeling that she wasn't going to be defensive.
Okay.
The Now, she'd been around people there at the hospital. But when we first walked in there, she was a little bit on the defensive side. So when I walked up to that cage and looked into that cage and looked at her and she looked back at me, it was, you could see a kind of a calming effect in her eyes. And it was like she was almost wanting me to reach out and touch her.
Was there any kind of, any kind of indicator of any kind as to age or anything?
She was probably in her mid to late 20s is what I'm thinking.
Hey, George, something I wanted to ask you about was, and, you know, I mean, you know, man, see some footprints, and I've seen several footprints, but I saw a little hand, kind of a hand smudge, but I was curious. I wanted to ask you if you had noticed how her hand structure was, if her fingers were, thick like the pads, like the feet are, or they were they?
Her hands were thick. Her hands were thick. They're not. They weren't, well, I've got small hands, but her hands were bigger than mine. They were thicker than mine. I used to take martial arts, and my hands at that time were pretty well calloused, and they were pretty heavy. But her hands were, they were structured the same, but they were literally covered with hair.
And
the only thing that wasn't covered with hair, and that was the palms of her hands.
Right. What about her head, the size of her head? Was it like an ape shape, or was it human shape? I know the facial features.
It was more human shape. It was more human shape. It wasn't a cone head. It was more human shape. Perhaps the skull, the forehead was a little higher than normal. As far as the roundness of the crown, from what I could see, it was that very similar to a human, maybe a little bit larger.
Wow.
You know, there just wasn't that much animal to her other than the hair on her.
Gotcha.
George, I've told many people that story. I think it's an amazing story. How long ago was that, Ben?
Say again, Mike.
I think that's a very amazing story. I've told people about that story. And how long ago? What year was that, probably?
Well, that was in October or November of 73.
Okay. That's
and I'm 67 now, so do your math, because I can't tell you how old I was then.
Yeah. Were they brushing her hair at one time? Didn't they brush her hair one time?
Say again?
Didn't they brush her hair? One time, like they were, got a chance to brush her hair, comb it, or something.
Yeah, there was a woman in the cage with her that was brushing her hair.
Right. That's what I thought.
And the hair on her head was longer than the rest of the hair on her.
Yeah.
The rest of the hair on her was probably 5 or 6 inches in length. But the hair on her head... you know how you go down and you get a haircut and your hair grows out?
Yeah.
And so she had had numerous haircuts. It's
okay.
just like the hair on your face when you're a young man, you don't shave and you don't really start growing facial hair, huh?
Did she have a lot of hair on her face?
Okay. Yeah, she did. The only place where she didn't have hair was, like I say, on her forehead, her nose, and her cheekbones.
Mm.
The rest of her was hair.
Well, that's, yeah, I love that story.
What did her lips look like?
The lips, they were wide, but they were quite human-like.
I want to ask about her big toe. Was it like a person's big toe? I've seen footprints where the smaller toes were a little bit longer than the big toe, and the big toe was kind of offset. Then I've seen some that looked just as like a giant human foot.
You know, that was too long ago for me to remember. And I really didn't take notice of her feet other than the fact that they were big and they were covered with hair. Mm-hmm. And they said that she didn't like wearing shoes. Of course, you get that much hair, you're not going to like wearing shoes either. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, you got that much hair, you're not going to like wearing clothes. You know?
Yeah.
Every time you turn, hair pulls, you know.
Could you see the buttocks and private parts or anything like
that? No, I didn't. Mm. No, the only thing I saw was cleavage.
Uh-huh.
That was due to the dress that she was wearing. You could see that she had cleavage. You was looking through the hair to see it.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, wow.
Well, everybody, I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight. It's been an enjoyable experience.
Well,
I'm
an artist, and I drew a picture that was described to me sometimes, and I thought about tendency.
You can do that. Yeah.
If you do that, if you take the description that I gave you,
yeah,
and if somebody sends it to me, which I'll give you my address, not right now,
yeah,
but if you send me a picture of it, perhaps I could even narrow down the description.
Yeah, that would be great, yeah.
I'd even talk to you on the phone. You know, and as a matter of fact, I'd enjoy talking to any of you.
But what I'll do is after the show, if you'd like, I'll contact you. I'll give Taran your number, George.
Okay.
And you guys can make contact.
All right.
That'd
be super.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight. It's been a real enjoyable experience here. George, thank you again. Rocky and Swede, thank you. Anthony, thank you. Taran, thank you. Mac, thanks a lot.
Sure.
I appreciate everybody's time. And we're going to, Kyle, maybe we'll be back next week. I don't know. It depends on where he's at when we test it out before the show, and sometimes it just doesn't work. Mm. But we'll see everybody next week. I want everybody to keep on Bigfooting and take care and God bless. We'll see you all next week.
All right.
Marco, Bill, have a good one.
Everybody. God bless.
All the rest of you have a good one, too. Good night.
I will.
Good night, Matt.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legend, tales, and facts.